Today I welcome Brian Kelly of UConn, who is going to talk to us about a recently published peer-reviewed paper of his. Hello, Brian. Thank you for joining us today. Could you give us a little bit more information about this paper of yours?
Yeah, sure. The paper is entitled From Web Accessibility to Web Adaptability, and it has been published in the Disability and Rehabilitation Assistive Technology Journal.
Were there other authors involved with this paper?
Yes, this was very much a joint exercise. So I was lead author, but in addition, Liddy Neville, who's a professor in Australia, Sotiris Fanau, who's a research student at the University of West of England, Ruth Ellison and Lisa Herod, who also work in Australia. I met them at a conference in Australia in January this year. And finally, David Sloan, who has been a co-author of several of my papers in the area of web accessibility.
Could you now give us a brief summary of the paper?
Yes, the paper really describes 5 years of research I've been involved in the area of web accessibility. It reviews the initial approach to web accessibility that we describe as web accessibility 1.0. And this is the view that web accessibility to people with disabilities can be addressed by the WAI, the Web Accessibility Initiatives model, which is based upon the WCAG guidelines for web content, the ATAG guidelines for web authoring tools, and the user agent guidelines for web browsers. There's a belief that if those guidelines are implemented, resources will be universally accessible to all. However, we feel, and the evidence suggests, that that hasn't happened. Quite clearly, resources aren't accessible to all. So we feel that this is a theoretical model, and what is needed is a practical model that can actually help people with disabilities in making use of the web today. So we then went on to describe web accessibility 2.0. This was a term that we coined in a paper that was published a few years ago, and this had parallels with web 2.0. It was flexible, it was adaptable, it was a notion of always beta, and rather than mandating a particular set of fixed rules, it was saying there can be a diversity of approaches, and that diversity of approaches might also embrace real-world solutions to inaccessible digital resources. A good example of this might be an e-learning resource. The e-learning resource might be a 3D, complicated 3D model of a molecule, and how might somebody who can't easily manipulate those 3D objects find it accessible? Mm. Would be difficult to implement. So we have suggested that an equivalent experience can be provided by a real-world learning experience. When I was at school, it was ping-pong balls and pipe cleaners for molecules. And so I'm saying that might be perfectly acceptable. Similarly for cultural resources. So what we say is that the information is not an aspect of the resource. The purpose is not an aspect of the resource. It's about the user's engagement with that resource. And there is a context to this. So we can't really talk about universal accessibility when there is very much a context. And that context might be the user preferences, the user environments. It might be the purpose of a resource. So if the purpose of a resource is information, well, that is very different from the purpose of a resource be to support learning or to provide a cultural experience. Because in those latter two cases, the processes really happens in the user's head rather than being a function of the resource. So that was Web Accessibility 2.0. And then last year, we published another paper on Web Accessibility 3.0. And this had parallels with the Web 3.0 and the Semantic Web by exploring ways in which the user might be provided automatically with equivalent resources. So providing metadata which could say that resource is similar to this resource. Mm. So that was the history. But we realised there was a problem with that versioning. It implies that Web 3.0 is the most recent way you should be doing things and waiting for a Web 4.0, whereas actually the Web Accessibility 2.0 and 3.0 are complementary. So we feel there's a need to move away from the versioning numbers, and that's why we've coined the phrase Web Adaptability. So the adaptability should be not just in using best practices for the web, some of which will be provided by in the WCAG guidelines, but others may not be. They might be provided by usability guidelines. The adaptability might also be adapting to use real-world resources, as I illustrated. So this is the approach that we feel aims to be future-proofed and flexible to support the complexities of the services that are being provided, the complexity and diversity of the user environment, the resource implications, the different definitions of disabilities that may be used in different countries throughout the globe, and also within different contexts within an organisation or an institution.
Thank you, Brian. That sounds like really important work you're doing. Where would we be able to find out more about the paper?
Well, the paper has been published, as I mentioned previously. It's also available on OPUS, the University of Bath's institutional repository. However, due to copyright restrictions, that paper will not be available for another year, sadly.
Right.
However, I have written a summary of the main aspects of the paper on my UK Web Focus blog. Follow the category to accessibility, you should find the paper.
That's really good information. Thank you so much, Brian, for your time today, and we look forward to an update in a few months' time, possibly.
Thank you, Shirley.